You're listening to TSN 1200.
Arbuckle, back to pass, throws into the end zone, and it's intercepted. Game over. This one, Deontay Ruffin. 8 seconds to go. Stampeders 17, Ottawa 3. What do you say? 18 losses in 19 games at TD Place.
Timing and chemistry isn't built overnight. You can learn the playbook a lot faster than you can learn a receiver's body language and stuff like that. So we're going to keep getting better at that stuff.
TSN 1200.
Well, a lot of room for improvement. That was the voice of Nick Arbuckle, who came into the game in the second half of the Red Blacks on a Friday night. They lost 17-3 to the Calgary Stampeders. Welcome back to TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Lever Sage, Sean Simpson, and Big Red with you until 10 o'clock today. And it is this week, Simmer, that the World Juniors get going, and they begin tomorrow. Canada's first game Wednesday against Latvia. But you have three games tomorrow, including the U.S. and Germany. Yourself, Jim Taddy, going to be on the pregame and the intermissions and the postgame show. Your impressions of what the team looks like right now, a lot of focus will be on Connor Bedard, but as you look at this team, what are your first impressions of it?
I got a lot of work to do to get to know them, Lee. I you know, honestly, it's so interesting in that if you're to gauge Team Canada, I don't know anything about the other teams, Lee. Like, I know some of the names, but there is no Russia. The United States has kept an older team. I believe the majority of them will age out, cannot play at Christmas time. So, gosh, until we really see the tournament, see things to start to get going. But obviously from the Canadian side, to see Ridly Gregg, and is it Ostachuk, the other sense?
Ostapchuk.
Ostapchuk. Yeah. You know, very impressive them in training camp. So those are the little things I look at, Lee, along with, hey, that's the fortunate part we have with Team Canada, the United States. You have a lot of high draft picks. Unfortunate that Tyler Boucher is not playing. But my first thought, Lee, is just trying to sit down and watch the games and become familiar and really see this as, and I know it's a conclusion for a lot of guys, the American team, I believe, will, you know, a lot of them will age out, which is kind of cool. It's unfinished business. Go and play. It's not like you can go back for another World Junior once you turn 20 years old. But it's really kind of, okay, familiarity and then setting it up. And I think, hey, let's also face facts here. It's an opportunity for a fresh set of faces to come out and put a nice face on Hockey Canada, which is not very good right now, and is much from the brand from the World Junior. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, Lee. And, hey, enjoy a little hockey here. Set it up for training camp, and then really look forward to Christmas. And I was at the tournament in when it was in Halifax last time. And, you know, hopefully everybody's on a little more, you know, it's a little more positive. But I think this is a great opportunity for Hockey Canada or the World Junior itself to kind of rebrand itself. And I think you have to be thankful that Mr. Connor Bedard is. So I'll summarize with that, Lee. That's probably my biggest thing. It's just a chance to look at him and how good are you? You know, if you're going to be a generational talent and it is your draft year, you know, we saw the way McDavid dominated, the way Sidney Crosby, there's not many 17-year-olds that are able to do that. And that's probably your first big test. Can you dominate this one? And can you dominate the one at Christmas time?
He'll play on a line, Connor Bedard, with Mason McTavish. They were together as a duo yesterday at practice. You mentioned Ridly Gregg and Zach Ostapchuk. Well, Mark Masters from TSN was able to catch up with Zach Ostapchuk and get a little bit more from him. His thoughts, he wasn't one of those initially that were on the team, but after everything got postponed and he's had a real good last 6 or 8 months, he is now on this team. Here is Zach Ostapchuk from the Ottawa Senators.
I really think I had a good end to the year and a really good playoff run, and I was able to add more speed to my game, more strength, and kind of more versatility throughout the lineup. I can kind of play in any situation, and I think that really helped me getting onto this team.
Is that a mindset? Was that a byproduct of the strength and speed you added? Like, what allowed you to be more versatile?
Yeah, I think I just started to think the game a little better, honestly. I think I kind of slowed down my mindset a bit, and I was just kind of relaxed and trust my instincts, and I think that really helped me.
That can be a tough thing to do, right? So how did you have any tricks? Is it a mindset thing, watching film?
Yeah, I think it was just a confidence thing, honestly, throughout the year. I mean, you get more comfortable as the year goes on, and I think once my team started, we kind of started to struggle a bit, and I felt like I needed to kind of change my game to help us out. And I feel like I did that, and it helped me get on this team.
When the December camp came and went, was that a source of motivation for you, or how did you process that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit. You obviously want to get invited to that camp. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's we're here now. So, I mean, it's really cool.
Now that you are here, what sort of impact, what sort of role do you feel like you can play for this team?
Yeah, I really think I can be a guy that's extremely hard to play against. I think I could be on our PK unit and just be a guy that other teams don't want to play. And I think I can shut down top lines and I can skate with anybody. So that's what I can bring.
I think Senators fans would like to see you play with Ridly Gregg. What do you think sort of chemistry might be between you guys? Because he's a guy who likes to do a lot of the similar things you just mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. I think we play pretty similar. I've played a bit with him at development camp and last year's main camp. So, I mean, to play with him, that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I'd be okay with that. So,
what has been the feedback from Ottawa?
Yeah, I mean, they just said they're proud of me, and they just told me that they like what I'm doing and keep going, and they've just been wishing me good luck and all the best. So,
Zach, congratulations. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So there's Zach Ostapchuk, Senators prospect with Mark Masters from TSN. He mentioned, Sean, that he came on at the end of the year in 60 regular season games. He had 26 goals, but a lot of them in the second half. He had 43 points. Just 17 assists, but he did score 26 goals. But in the playoffs, that's where he really kind of stepped up his game. In 12 games, he had 7 goals, 16 assists for 23 points in the playoffs. And it's development, right? It's getting older at 6'3", 200 pounds, understanding your body, what you can do well, what you can't do well. And you can almost see from his stats where that light bulb went on and where he started to become a much better player.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, Lee, because sometimes you have a great training camp in the big club. I remember back in my day, got drafted and came. I didn't go to the summer camp for the World Junior, and then I was so confident, Lee, and probably played the best hockey of my life, and I ended up playing on the World Junior. And in this case, you had a player that really stood out in training camp to the point where you earned a contract, and for whatever reason, it started a little flat, as you said. Now you come all the way back, and hey, the simple fact for him, and you look at that roster, and I know they're having separate training camps, other things. There's players on this team that won't be eligible. But in his case, hey, if you've made it now, I assume that's a lock to play in Halifax as well. So back-to-back World Juniors are awesome. And I look at a guy like McTavish as well, to go a little bit off script here, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy that played on every team last year, played in every league. He is going to play in the NHL this year. He did not have to go to the World Junior. And right. He wanted to. He wants to play. And I look at a situation like Slafkovský down the road with Montreal, and they say, well, he's not going to go to this one because he's preparing for the season. And I look at that and think, okay. And I remember even with Lafreniere, and this is Jeff Gorton with the Rangers, now Jeff Gorton with Montreal. I remember with Lafreniere, why would you not go and play in the World Junior against your own peer group instead of sitting around in New York and getting ready and he's adjusting for training camp? No, you go and dominate your peer group. And a guy like Slafkovský, you go right now, play in a World Junior, see what you're all about, instead of going to training camp, and now is he going to make the team, and do you send him to the American League, or do you end up putting him back in junior? I just love this with Mason McTavish and other guys, and also say this in the case of Jake Sanders, first of all, he's hurt. Like, it's all circumstantial, but if you've just been drafted, Lee, there's no reason you shouldn't be at the World Junior. You're not tuning up. This is not Connor McDavid for a first pick overall in Slafkovský. Go and play and dominate, and then come into training camp instead of being coddled and he's going to stay and train in Slovakia and get rid of a training camp. Come on, man. Go play. Like I said, you're not, in my estimation, not NHL ready. Go play and even if you are, what's better than to go and dominate a summer tournament mm-hmm. in the World Junior? I really don't understand that.
So,
where, you know, he's prepping for training camp. And like I said, in the case of Sanderson, he is. Like, he's prepping to come play here in Ottawa. But Ridly Gregg has a real outside chance of making it, but he's still at the World Junior, because it's a great stepping stone. And the one thing you want to do always, I don't care who you are, Lee, you dominate your level before you come along next. That's what you end up doing. And people say, well, Slafkovský had the big Olympics. Okay, he had the Olympics. He had 10 points in the Finnish league last year. Played in the bottom six of the forwards. Why would you not be at this tournament right now showing everybody that you're ready to play in the National Hockey League?
So I'm just trying to think of the answer, because it doesn't seem to be a lot of answers as to why people wouldn't go and play. Would it be that they would be worried about putting somebody in a situation where you're expected to dominate, and then if you don't dominate,
I know. And what a terrible mentality! Like, and
no,
that's,
but is that a worry? I don't know.
I just look at this and I say that from Montreal's side, and I look at a guy like Capo Kako. Jeff Gorton did a lot of great things in New York. The few of the picks there, from Kako to Kravtsov to Elias Anderson, there were situations there where, hey, other stuff was great. But when it comes to draft and development, and Ottawa may be the best in the business, Lee, in doing this, I don't know. I like I said, and this is going to be interesting, because Kotkaniemi came into town, and you know he was the Cats. You know what? Now he all of a sudden is rolled out of town. You're bringing this kid in, and I thank God for Shane Wright that he went to Seattle. I think that's the best thing could ever happen to his career. It's a lot of pressure, and I respect that. It's a great market. But you've got a kid right now. To me, the first thing he should do is show you that he's an absolute dominant junior player. And that whole farm team, like what I would have done with him, Lee, I would have left him in Finland for another year. But this, having him in Montreal and send him the American Hockey League, as you know, Lee, is not easy. And you know what I mean? And
no.
I don't know that as an 18-year-old that he's going to dominate at that level. So to your point, if that's what you're thinking is, well, that's a bad one. His whole thing should be, hey, let's get there. Let's play in a World Junior and then see where the season goes.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I mean, if you're worried about a player not dominating against his peer group in 4, 5, 6 games, you probably have more problems, you know, than you have for a top pick.
Yeah, but even for a player. But now here, I'll also say a bit of the other side. I also know that when it comes to the draft and all the things that go with it, Lee, it becomes a long summer, right, with the testing and all that. But, yeah, I still look at this case. And like I said, for the 19-year-olds that don't go, that are prepping up to really make teams – like I said, Lee, it's all kind of, you know, each circumstance is a little bit different. But anybody that was drafted this summer should be at the World Junior playing. And if for no other reason, you may never get a chance to play in a World Junior or another, right? I mean, hey, I want to go. Why wouldn't you want to just go play some good summer? And please don't people talk about, hey, you know, the risk of getting injured and everything else. Listen, man, that's another approach that never works when it comes to hockey. Like, you got to play the game. Sitting on the sidelines trying to protect yourself doesn't mean anything. You go and you have fun and you play with your peer group and you try to win for your country.
Just too much hockey? Is that another answer? Like, as you said, with all the testing and what happens, that
there can
people
be circumstances.
Are still worried about how many games guys are playing?
It could be. But he had a guy, I think, played 35 games in the Finnish league last year, Lee. Now he plays
Yeah, I don't mean him specifically.
No, but,
like,
but for
I
sure.
don't disagree
no,
with
No, no, no. I know what you're saying. Like, every circumstance is different. I totally, like I said, Jake Sanderson, even if he didn't have the hand injury, after the year and everything else, there's a part of your training component that by playing a tournament in the middle of August can shift that a bit. So I understand that. But I'm not taught, but, you know, so for the 19-year-olds, but here's Mason McTavish. Like I said, he doesn't have any purpose. He doesn't need to go to another World Junior, but he wants to play hockey. And that's what it's all about. And I just love that.
And to your point, Ridly Gregg, I mean, he's played a lot of hockey.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Ridly Gregg, in his own mind, whether he does or not, but I think he believes there's an outside shot that he can make this Ottawa Senators
team. Absolutely.
And so, what better way to go get yourself primed and ready to go to be able to play? And is it a lot of hockey? Yes, of course it's a lot of hockey. But, I mean, this is what these guys have dreamed of their entire lives. And to be in that sort of environment, to put the maple leaf on your front and to be able to represent Canada and then to get yourself in a spot where, I mean, if he plays well, he's going to roll into training camp with the utmost of confidence to be able to make the team. It would only help them, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And then the other thing you're dealing with, Lee, with almost everybody involved in this tournament, is how much hockey have they played in the last 72 months? You know, not 72. Hello. Not going to
no,
say that.
No, but the last couple of years.
24,
COVID,
36 months.
Yeah.
Last 3 years. Like, what's your window been? I bet you Ridly Gregg looks and says, you know what? Might have been a little bit of a jam-packed year last year, but the previous year, I only played, what did he play, 15 games in the American Hockey League? You know? I mean, so it's, as I say, and it's all looked at a little bit differently. I kind of raises some suspicion when I look at that. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, this is the one where, like I said, the kids that are drafted this year, don't be prepping and pretending you're getting ready for the. And if you make the NHL, greatly, but come on, there's so many other stepping stones that you should be going to at this point before it's worrying about how you're going to be looking in training camp. Hey, a couple years from now or next year, I understand that, but right now, no, you should be playing in a tournament like that.
Texas.
And it also upsets me because I want to see him play. So it's also for selfish reasons on my side.
Of course. Text comes in, 12-1200. Zach sounds like a beauty, speaking like a 10-year NHL vet. And quick question for you, Simmer.
Yeah.
Does Jim Taddy still sport the sweet mustache from Marcus?
Yeah, you know what? The other thing with, and I call him JT because I didn't know any about this guy stuff that he does. First of all, I grew up watching him and Mark Hebscher, and that we're going 40 years.
Sportsline, yeah.
He does not look any different. I can't even say Hebsy looks any different. Like, it is unbelievable.
I know.
Like, we're talking, I don't know where Bill Bird is these days, but my God, like on a Friday night watching that. Watching a little David Letterman after, like, I'm literally talking 1984. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the sweet spot of that, and they were so far ahead of their time. So, yeah, still got the stash going and still talks and sounds the same, and super dude.
Can't wait for the tournament to get going. Sean and Jim Taddy will be part of your coverage for the World Juniors, and we will have the games, the Canada games, for you starting 5:30, the pregame on Wednesday, and 6 o'clock, Canada will play Latvia. When we talk World Juniors, there's always one of these techs, Simmer, that come in. Morning, guys, looking at that USA roster. Very concerning that Tyler Boucher is a top 10 pick, couldn't make that team. I think we've been through this before, but it is kind of the week of the World Juniors, and I'm sure this topic will come up again about how the U.S. did keep a very old roster going into this tournament, and they will turn that roster over in December.
Yeah, no, exactly. And just also careful. I, you know, played in the World Junior. I can think of a lot of great players that were cut from that hockey team, from the likes of Adam Graves, other guys. And, you know, so you have to know. Now, as far as Tyler Boucher, it's controversial because of the year he had, where he was picked. But at the end of the day, for USA Hockey, is this also Nate Lehman, who's at Providence? Where is Tyler Boucher from? He's from Rhode Island. Did he want to go to Providence? No, he went to BU. Is there some politics involved? There are always a politics. Just like, and again, coming to the CHL, did that hurt him a little bit? I again, these are all things you just look at, Lee, but we don't know the roster well enough. But they wanted to bring this group back. Nate has had a lot of success with them. A lot of these kids have gone through the U.S. development program. It's kind of like a last hurrah for the group. So, hey, if we get to Christmas time, and I'll say that, you know, and that can get politics a little bit. But if Tyler Boucher is not playing well and he doesn't make the World Junior team at Christmas, I'd be concerned at that point. But for right now, I don't think there's much. And from what I understand, the couple of games he played in there, he had 4 goals, had a very good training camp, and just the choice of the coach at the end of the day.
Yeah, so I'm not concerned whatsoever.
But I don't even know him well enough. That's the part I keep going back to, Lee. I tried to go to the 67s game at the end of the year and just end up socializing. So until I really get a feel, and also I think for everything he went through last couple of years, a real good summer, a reset, knows where he's going, which I assume is the Ottawa 67s.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see him in training camp. Let's see when he gets to Ottawa. He should, as a 19-year-old, because of his physical skill set and where he was drafted and everything else, he should be a dominant player in the OHL this year.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking for.
I'm going to completely judge him on that. The training camp, the beginning of the year with the 67s, and then does he play well enough and can he get into the World Juniors in December? And if he does, what can he do at that point?
Yeah, that impact, and that is a great part, Lee, and again, I say about Slaskowski, but just overall, as we get back to a more normal World Junior come Christmas time, that is where scouting, it is such a great thing. When you look at this, and when you're with a team, and you've drafted a guy or other team's, you know, picks, when you go there, and you see them against the best of the best of their peer group, it is absolutely the best time to evaluate. And what's also happened is that, you know, most of the hockey is the same now, right? There's not a huge difference of the way the Canadians play to the Swedes, to the Finns, to other players. It's such a terrific opportunity, not to mention the pressure. So real good evaluation time, not as much this summer, but certainly as you look to the tournament in Halifax.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the World Juniors as the show progresses. And again, Canada's first game, and we'll have it for you Wednesday, 6 o'clock at night with a 5:30 pregame with Jim Taddy and Sean Simpson. But the tournament starts tomorrow with 3 games in Edmonton. Take a quick break, come back, get into a little bit more of the Red Blacks. The controversial finish in the Blue Jay game has some people talking from yesterday as well. Lee Versage, Sean Simpson with Cam Big Red here on TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Welcome back to TSN Mornings on TSN 1200. Lee Versage, Sean Simpson, and Big Red, Yes Guy, love Sportsline and how they would embellish names like Sammy Scotch and Sosa from Steve. was one of the staples, Simmer, for me growing up, even sometimes up in, like, at the cottage or at camp where you had the rabbit ears and the antenna could only get a couple of channels, but 11:30.
No, it really was. And again, I guess till that point, Lee, of moving to the United States in 1989, TNT had Vince Gelinas and Fred Hickman. They were on TNT, and it was almost the same show, and this is later in the 90s, but I just always look back to Sportsline, and in essence of even way ahead of ESPN, right? The two-person anchor coming in, mixing the highlights, having the Hebsies and whatever else they had on there, and just the highlights themselves. And I think for all of us growing up, Lee, that hey, that's your source for hockey right there, right? I mean, that's where you're going to get all your highlights, and they had a whole lot of fun doing it. And like I said, hard to believe that's 37, 40 years ago, and old Tat, the Tat Man's still looking good.
Yeah, and still doing a great job on radio as well. And you're right, because back then you didn't really have too many sources to go get your highlights.
No.
So it was all kind of packed in one place.
Yeah, funny, if you're living here in Ottawa, a few things you tried to do if you were a sports, you know, I love my sports like everybody else. You'd watch Brian Smith on here. I think Dan Sagan had just been hired by CBC, so you had a couple of really good ones. Out of Montreal, Ron Roosh was doing the sports highlights, so you try to find that. And of all things, Pembroke had a station, and I don't know who the fellow was. He had kind of what appeared to be red hair. I don't know I don't know if it was real hair, but that's okay. That's okay. Whatever works for you. The 80s rug wasn't the best, but they had some pretty good highlights as well. Those are your sources, Lee, right? I'm trying to think of, you know, what else. Obviously, CBC and CTV had some great coverage of international events. You had the wild world of sports on the weekend, but you just scramble around like anything you could end up finding. And for kids growing up in Ottawa, those are your sources to get your sports.
And then JR with Mark Hebsher to begin on OSR.
That's cool. Like,
started.
Yeah, I didn't realize any of that until, you know, years of working here and kind of hearing some of the backstory and everything else, and how that went back to, that would have been like around 2000?
Like 99, the station began. Yeah. So it was somewhere between 99. I started here September 2000. Mark Hebsher was already come and gone. Okay. At that point.
And that was funny too, Lee, when I travel for scouting, you come into Canada and obviously you get the highlights, but I can remember at whatever point, you know, staying at the Westin Hotel, Harbour Castle in Toronto, and that was, I think, when the Score had started, and how they would just run the replays to the point of, if you had gone out for a couple of pops, you'd watch the next day, and I'd be like, is that still the same games that they're showing? the highlight reel just rolled over and over, and I always enjoyed that because it's a little bit harder in the United States to get coverage of the old ice hockey back in the day.
Oh, my God, that's another one. Andre Bad Moon Rising.
Yeah.
Right there with the song. My favorite was Andre Bad Moon Rising from Westboro Rob. And Sunday Night Bloopers were the bestos of all time on Sportsline from Jeff.
And if you say some of the names, and again, being more Americanized at the time, that would have been Chris Berman, right? And so he had, I'm trying to think of it, and the Bad Moon Rising he had for sure, but he had Sleeping with the Bienemy. That was one of the ones.
Sleeping with Bienemy.
If you remember the movie.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, there was really, quite a few. And now Andre Rison also is famous for the girlfriend who's passed away burning the house down, right? Remember that?
I don't.
Oh, okay. The from TLC, the singer, and unfortunately she died, I think, in Central America. She was down doing some type of mission. The car flipped over, whatever. But they had gotten a bit of a dust up, an argument. I don't mean a dust up, an argument in Atlanta. And Atlanta has these gorgeous neighborhoods, just incredible homes. And she made the decision to set the place on fire, Lee. I think she threw some clothes into the bathtub, and it did quite a bit of damage there on the old house. So good old Andre Rison. And that would have been right at the time that I think David Justice was married to Halle Berry, right? Those are your big. And, well, that's also at a time when I think the Falcons and certainly the Braves were at the forefront of sports, right? I mean, the Braves on TNT and how good of a baseball team they were. They were a pretty big brand in the United States at that time.
Atlanta had quite the run in the 90s, right?
Yeah, without only ever getting one championship, eh? You know, you kind of look at that almost, well, not the Bills, because unfortunately never won any, but, you know, you kind of look at that window of a great team that at the end of the day, but you're right. The pitching staff was, and just everything. They were a great franchise.
Well, and just the Falcons had some success. They ended up getting to the Super Bowl. They had some good teams in Atlanta. Would you consider a team that was like so good every year? They weren't just good, they were great. That only won one championship, but were there every year, like in the playoffs, contending. A lot of people look at that as a negative, like with how great those teams were that they only won one World Series. Is that how you would look at it?
Yeah, I would, Lee. And I wouldn't look at, I don't want to say negative, but you kind of say, gosh, maybe a bit of underachieving, right? Maybe a thought that there should have been at least been one more World Series, but I also don't. And I even say that to the Bills. I mean, hey, you still made four Super Bowls. It's just almost sad that you can't come together having won one championship, right? And we talked last week about Bill Buckner. Like, the last thing I'd want for any athlete to feel is the way that Lee Norwood felt, right? I mean, Nobody needs to carry that burden around for the rest of their life. It's only a sport, right? You didn't do anything wrong. I mean, hey, You just missed. But, they're great teams and a great organization. Just feels like, God, that should have brought a little bit more home at the time.
Just thinking back to the Chris Berman-isms, as they called them, I think my favorite one, you would have been familiar with this player in Baltimore. With the Orioles. Miguel, the bigger they are, the hotter they fall.
Oh, is that what he did? Okay, awesome. Okay.
I love that one.
That is good, actually.
Always was one of my absolute favorites. Like, I would watch the highlights hoping that Miguel Tejada had done something because Berman would always kind of...
I think as it went along, and especially in the home run derby, people didn't appreciate it, but I'm assuming he came up with the way, 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 back, right, and gone.
Yeah, he just did it too much in the home run derby.
Yeah,
there's so many home runs that the whole broadcast was back. Yeah. Also, I just remembered the Jake Delhomme one, too.
Okay.
And, of course, he wasn't a fantastic quarterback, but it was...
Was Jake Delhomme with the Falcons?
He could have, but when his time in Carolina, when he...
Carolina, you're right, sorry.
And he bounced around, so I'm not sure exactly, but it was... in the singing voice too, which I'm not going to do, but it was the Jake Daylight come, you got a Delhomme.
That's good, and you're right. A big part of it is just a simple delivery, right?
Yeah.
Are you able to tie that into some different things?
Oh, exactly.
But it's
having fun, right?
And we go
back to Jim Taddy, Mark Hebscher, Chris Berman. It was, okay, let's have some fun with this. Mm-hmm. Let's make this an entertainment show and not just about, third period. There's a highlight of a guy that goes offside and it's a big part in the game. And you're not just showing highlights of the game, but you're trying to have some fun with it.
Yeah, now I'm having flashbacks as well, Lee, because there was also, if you grew up in the area or, you watched any of the morning TV out of the United States, Warner Wolf was on there for years.
Yeah.
And his big tag was, let's go to the video. Remember that? And they would roll that. And also what's so cool is that with the sports machine, when you live in D.C. and you realize your nightly sports guy is actually George Michael, right? Now, that was pretty cool.
Oh, George Michael and the sports machine was, like, I didn't watch it that often because I couldn't get it that often. But when I was able to see it, man, I love that show.
Yeah, and he was such a, he had a huge ego. But he was a great, a great entertainer.
He was a character.
And, at that time, it was all about the Washington football team. And, he was just almost larger than life. And covering that, and then also having a national show, which didn't happen a whole lot.
So some texts coming in now. This one comes into us from Pembroke. Their favorite Chris Berman-ism, Bert, be home by 11. Like that one.
Perfect.
Like that one a lot.
And when I think of Bert, and again, I hope I have it right, very strong stash game, did he not?
Yes.
Yeah. Bert, be home by 11.
It's really good, right? Great show, boys. Speaking of sports lines, you guys remember the OHL game of the week on Global? Missed those days. So simple. And our friend Jack Miller was a part of those.
Yeah, and we used to make fun of Jack on the bus. Buddy Tony Joseph, who lives in Cornwall now, he used to imitate Jack. Because when Jack did some of those, like Beehive, or that was one of the main sponsors, was some type of corn syrup or something.
Oh, Beehive corn syrup. And I love Beehive corn syrup.
And Jack had a mouth that was moving that kind of was similar to watching those karate movies that had been dubbed over. So we used to have a little bit of fun with that. But here is my historic reference to the OHL Game of the Week, Lee. The year before I got drafted to the Sioux Greyhounds, they had the most historic brawl in the history of the Ontario Hockey League. at the Mountain Arena against Hamilton.
Okay.
And that was on the Global Game of the Week. So for the 3 years I played in the Sioux, we were banned from it. I never played once on the
Really?
Global. Yeah, we never got a chance to play again. This brawl is, you're talking about the likes of Bob Probert, you know, Shane Corson, like teams loaded with tough guys. And this thing was the old Mountain Arena, which the following year they moved to the Cops Coliseum. But this was just an all-out brawl, and it was on the Global Game of the Week, and then Dave Branch was not too happy about that. So he's like, nope, not going to have any more of a Bill LaForge's Hamilton team, and Crispy had moved on, but right. Not going to have any more Greyhounds either. So
I just remember growing up in Toronto, it always used to be on Saturday, 2 o'clock, right?
Yeah. And then they put a ton of them. I think a lot of Marley's games would go on.
A lot of Marley's and a lot of Belleville Bulls games.
Yeah.
And we always...
Lots of Oshawa Generals as well.
Oshawa Generals.
Little corridor right there. Yeah.
But I remember, too, like how many Leafs were drafted in the first round? The three? Weren't they all from Belleville?
Yeah. Can you name them?
Scott Thornton? Not Scott Thornton. It was a Thornton, for sure.
It is, exactly, yeah.
It is Scott Thornton?
I believe so.
Okay. Because
now you're... Because there's going to be one of the ones you can mix up, but, yeah. See if you can get the other two.
Oh. They're on the tip of my tongue, and I don't know.
Funny part, I just mentioned Tony Joseph. So growing up, he and Scott Pearson played together.
Scott Pearson, yes.
No, but it wasn't Scott. So
it wasn't?
No, Scott was drafted by Edmonton in the first round, but what it ended up being is a player I got later.
It was Pearson.
Yeah, it was, exactly. It was Robbie, though.
Rob Pearson.
Yeah, Robbie was a big goal scorer, and we traded for Robbie in Washington, I think for Peter Zezel. I think Robbie's coaching somewhere. And then the other one was Steve Bancroft.
Yeah,
so those ended up being the three. And I still remember because the young general manager for Toronto at the time would have been, he's on the radio now, and his brother was a PR guy forever. Nice full head of hair, was the GM for Toronto at the time.
Don't know.
Yeah, okay. Anyways, I'm blanking on that. But anyways, that was the big thing. And, unfortunately, I don't think any of the three. I would say out of that, Thornton ended up having a long career for himself, right?
Yep.
Played over 1,000 games. Robbie never
but
had
no,
the,
yeah,
wasn't
those,
much of a skater.
It was a huge thing because it was three guys, same team, first round, and they just didn't materialize.
Yeah, I think Bancroft hurt quite a bit. And as I said, with Robbie, could shoot the puck unbelievably well, but just didn't have the wheels.
Morning, fellas. Simmer talking about score replays got me thinking about watching old sports. Sometimes late night, turn on the past final rounds where Tiger wins a major. Do either of you guys watch old games or sports?
Yeah, not very often. I've watched a little bit of the Tom Brady summaries of when the Pats have won some different things there, Lee. But as far as that, like some of the old hockey comes on and I don't feel like it's nostalgic enough. Like if you went back to the 70s and something was on, I might. But to answer your question, no, I would not. Now also, and we're getting into the TV references, Lee, what time was Super Dave on? Was Super Dave on after David Letterman? Can't remember, right?
Super Dave Osborne was, on afterwards. So I told you, I used to go watch all of the tapings.
Yeah, Super Dave.
Super Dave Osborne, because it was all at the Markham Theater.
Yeah.
Done. And, oh, my God, just so funny. I loved Super Dave Osborne. Gord Stellick is the guy that
And his brother was the PR guy for years. And Gord actually went over to the Rangers with Neil Smith after that and then didn't work out and came back and had a real nice broadcasting career, real gentleman.
Yeah. So thank you for everyone texting in.
Appreciate that.
Gord Stellick. I don't go back and watch a lot of old games unless they're very historic for me personally.
And for me, everything that you'd have to do with it, like I went back and watched some different things, lots of sports, but it's all documentary relatedly. Like I can't watch the event itself, but if you do a full breakdown like they did with the 72 series, you have the Senna documentary, I think the 72 basketball, Russia versus U.S.
Yeah, you want to know the behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm really interested in at that point, is the inner workings of how it all came together, good or bad.
Yeah, I mean, I have some games that I don't go back and watch the entirety of them, but I do have some games where, like, big moments happen that I'd love to have kind of on copy in case I want to go back. And
I think we'd all agree too, if it's your favorite team, I have no interest in watching the Patriots lose to the Giants. Like I don't know what would ever have any excitement to go back. Everything has to be. And the one thing I do appreciate though, and I wouldn't watch it in full game, but there's certain things that you have to go back and realize in your lifetime. And I was fortunate in 2004 to have moved from Maryland to Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
The run of the Red Sox, like those are the certain things in sports league sometimes it's good just to review how it all happened. The fact of, with the history, to be down by the Yankees 3-0, to be losing in game four, to come back and win that and win your first World Series in a million years. Like, there are certain sporting events where I might not watch the whole thing, but maybe a recap of how amazing it is, right? How many things had to go right, a pinch runner and Mariano Rivera on the mound, and you know what I mean? Everything that had to happen. And I know you don't want, like, the Patriots, but the 28-3. And you think to yourself, if the guy just throws the ball out of bounds instead of taking taking a sack, the game would have been over. Yeah. Like, how many windows had to open up for somebody to end up winning something? That to me is always.
But those
cool.
are incredible things to go back and watch to see some of the mistakes
exactly.
that are made, to see. And I wouldn't do it if my team lost, but I do understand what you're saying. Like, I would go back and watch the second half of 28-3.
Yeah,
just to be able to see how it all happened.
No, I agree. And it's just really neat. Or, you know, when somebody makes a big change, you know, and you think as a kid when the Montreal Canadiens called the illegal stick on L.A. and they end up winning in overtime, right? And, you know, just how some decision, and as I said, I go back to that pinch runner, I think it was Dave Roberts, was it not?
For the Red Sox? Yes, it was, yep.
And just like how that little you know, if you're a Red Sox fan at that point, you're like, okay, listen, what I need you to do here is stop it and lose so I can get on with my life.
Right.
And even living in that area, that game seven, I drove down to Bridgeport, Connecticut to watch it was the Islanders farm team. And at that time was the lockout year. I think I spent, and this is maybe why I'm in radio, not in scouting, I think I spent almost all of the game in the lobby trying to watch the baseball game. Because you have to understand where Bridgeport, Connecticut is. Connecticut's the transition zone. Like, you're either still a Boston fan, or down there it's almost all Yankees fans, but Connecticut is like, can go either way, right? Where, you know, they're not necessarily New England guys or New York. And I just remember watching that thing. I was like, my God, it was just so cool. And they're up by a zillion, and there comes Pedro, and all of a sudden, who's your daddy? And they start launching home runs off of him. And it's one of those ones that, and I get at that time on the Sox bandwagon, like, it's not over till it's over. Sincerely, Lee, like, right? You know what I mean? Like, no matter what the score
you
was,
never believe it.
It doesn't matter, you know? And then all of a sudden they just cruised right through, and I think he ended up sweeping the Cardinals. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it would be completely accurate.
I think that's where they had
people forget sometimes, you know, those big moments of, you know, the U.S. beating Russia, the miracle on ice, and they had to go on and win the final.
Exactly.
It's almost the same thing. Like, I don't remember. Like, I remember it was St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you, Simmer. I remember a lot from the Yankees-Red Sox series. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything from the Red Sox-Cardinals except for the final out.
Yeah, that's the only thing I remember, too. And then the controversy of, was it Doug Mankiewicz keeping the ball?
Yeah.
You know what that...
But that's the only thing I remember from the entire series.
The other one in a recap of it, which is funny and had to alter, that was also when they were filming the Fever Pitch movie, right? And that was and then they had to go back and redo the movie, and they were actually there for the final out, because the whole premise of the movie, was it Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore? The whole premise of the movie was being a Red Sox fan and how it always ended miserably. And of all years that they filmed it, they won. So they had to actually reshoot the ending of the series. Like, I think it was expected, well, this is perfect. They're going to lose to the Yankees again, and that's the end of the movie. Nope. They actually were, they ran on the field after. That's in the movie itself.
The way that you watch your team, so you never believe that it's going to be over until it's over. Like, I'm the same way. Like, even in big football games with the Cowboys, and people will laugh at this, Cowboys are way ahead, because everyone's like, oh, well, they're never way ahead. But there's a couple of games where they have been.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
I'm convinced they're up 24-3 and they're losing. Like, I'm telling you, if this happens, if this one play happens and they get in the end zone and then we kick off, I convince myself.
And even when I'm working for a team, I always feel like when we're down, we're never going to come back. And it's not about losing, hopefully. It's just being kind of, you know, it's an easy way to let yourself down, right? Well, God, we're just ridiculous. Down 3-1, we're not going to come back in this. And if you do, you do. But, you know, that's kind of the mentality I think most people end up bringing at the end of the day.
Yeah. But some of the games I have on, like, either on tape or on PVR, I think the greatest football game that I've ever seen was the Fiesta Bowl in 2006. I think it's 06, but I have to go back. Anyway, it was Boise State and Oklahoma. And it was the one where, as you said, Simmer, those sequence of events that had to happen as Boise State gets up. They're in this game. They're way ahead. They suddenly let Oklahoma back in it. They make all these mistakes where then they get down in the game and it's like, okay, well, the game's over. And they run this crazy hook and ladder to score a touchdown to get it into overtime. And that was just the beginning. Then it goes into overtime and it's gadget play, Statue of Liberty, this. Like, it was just the most insane thing I've ever seen. And I go back and watch it to just kind of remember some of the good times that sports can be. I have some of the Blue Jays World Series games where you don't think that they're going to come back. But I don't go back and watch the whole games. I just have these kind of sequence of events to see how it all played out.
Well, and if you
like you.
And if you grew up an Expos fan, you expected the worst thing to happen. Like, you expected if they have to win 2 out of 3 in a series against Pittsburgh, they're going to lose. And for Jays fans, my God, the peak of it being the Fernandez, but that was a big part of the Alomar trade, right? And Joe Carter, they had to do something to change the mentality because, you know, poor late great, you know, Tony Fernandez, he just looked miserable, right? Like, he was the epitome of, you'd kind of look at his face when things started going poorly and you knew it wasn't going to stop. And I guess it was also the negative swirl around George Bell at that time, right? I mean, we had not really seen that in Canada before where somebody could be that much of an a-hole, right? And be a good player. That's so interesting. And the other one, when now you were talking about football, one of the great highlight packs when it always comes around is the high school football game in Texas when they're playing at, I think they were playing at the old Dallas Stadium when they're down by like 40 points, the team, and they come all the way back. Do you remember that one?
Oh, the high school one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they ran back like a kickoff?
Oh, something, you know, and it was really, like you're
and
thinking.
And the announcer's crying.
Yeah, he's like, I just feel for these boys. Yeah. I think it is at the old, mind blank. What's
no, it's at the, it's at Texas Stadium.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, but the old one.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's just the highlight pack is just unbelievable. As you said, all the things that have to happen.
Because I think they scored with like 20 or 15 seconds to go to basically win the 4A high school championship.
Well, that's right. They had come back. And
but then they had to kick off, and the announcers are celebrating. We've won this championship. Yeah. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the guy runs it back, and they're in tears afterwards.
And that takes you to the classic back in the day where the band came on the field. The guy runs
Stanford and Cal
runs it back and just slams the poor trombone guy. So of all guys that don't need that in their life, that's been bullied their whole life.
Blindsided.
The trombone guy. Blindsided.
Like, it was a huge hit. sports announcer at Pembroke CHRO was Al Urania.
Okay. Yeah. That was
text comes in.
No, I appreciate that because they had a pretty good sports package that they put on. And like I said, you just search around and you knew the time that they'd be on every day and whatever there was to get your sports fix back then.
And Ron writes in, hi guys, talk about never being sure about winning. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan.
Oh, yeah.
Tough one.
Yeah.
Not a lot of big highlights for you.
Well, there's a documentary you have to watch, right? Is it Believeland or Cleveland? Or have you watched that?
I have not.
Oh, it goes through. And I didn't really realize.
The history.
I'd forgotten all of those John Elway drives and all the things you think of when everyone shows them famous.
The Ernest Biner fumble.
Well, they show the famous Michael Jordan shot. You have to always remember that was against Craig Elo and some very good Cavalier teams, right? You know, and it went through. But what was nice about it, it was done after LeBron had won something. But my God, you talk about a tortured past. Like, it was incredible, Lee, going through those two teams. Well, of all things, well, next thing you know, the Art Modell has moved the team to Baltimore.
Oh, in the middle of the night,
After Baltimore. All I heard when I lived there was how upset they were with Jim Irsay and taking the Colts. Now, they took the Colts' name as well.
Yeah.
That's all you ever heard in Baltimore. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to turn, at least keep your name, which was nice. Eh?
Exactly.
The Baltimore Browns wouldn't have been great.
No.
Actually, it would have worked, though.
Yeah, I don't like it still. We'll take a break. I know we're late, Cam, but we'll come back, talk some Red Blacks. We'll talk some World Juniors and some of your old sports memories as we are going down memory lane here a little bit on TSM Mornings on TSN 1200.